Does Friendly have a taste? If it does, it's probably like Hello's peppermint-flavored anti-plaque and whitening toothpaste. Brush away plaque, show tartar who's boss, and remove surface stains to naturally whiten. Hello's thoughtful and flavor-forward products make brushing your teeth feel like a confetti-filled bathroom dance party. So say hello to Hello with the always cruelty-free, never tested on animals toothpaste that's made to spread smiles. Visit HelloProducts.com and let Hello add some everyday yay into your life.
Acme Lithium, a company positioned near the epicenter of lithium production in the United States. Since 1966, Nevada's Clayton Valley has been the primary production source for lithium in all of North America. Acme Lithium holds two promising lithium projects in the Clayton Valley region. Acme Lithium, U.S. trading symbol ACLHF, and in Canada, ACME. Web address, acmelithium.com. That's acmelithium.com.
The proceeding may contain forward-looking statements which may not be realized.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. I welcome Francis Rose, the host of The Daily Scoop. This is part of Fed Scoop operation. Francis's conversations with members of the federal government, members former, previous, future, and their advisors and their counselors to run this apparatus and to suit the needs of the United States. We go immediately to the need of the United States and supply chains, because Francis's conversation with Jerry McGinn, I recommend in these last days. It's a website you can go easily and find and listen to the conversation. Jerry McGinn is the executive director of the Center for Government Contracting at George Mason University. Francis, the supply chain is now wrecked Thanksgiving to the extent that there's actually speculation that there's going to be a turkey shortage. So accredited food magazines are publishing alternative recipes. That's where we are, Francis, with weeks to go to Thanksgiving. It's not going to get better for Christmas. The recommendations are that mom and dad shop early. In fact, they've started those Friday sales that happen after Thanksgiving. They've started them now. That's the supply chain. So what is to be done, and what is the timeline? Good evening to you, Francis.
Good evening, John. Thanks for having me on, as always. The timeline is unknowable, unfortunately, at this point. The supply chain challenge that the federal government is dealing with, and specifically to Jerry's area of expertise, the Defense Department, because Jerry was in the department and oversaw the office that was the liaison between the Defense Industrial Base and the department itself. The challenge that they're having is that a lot of the things that need to be made in order for the Defense Department to use them need to be made in the United States. And I'm talking primarily about products, but not entirely. Services are the other big piece of the department's budget. And so getting that stuff that it can be sourced from the United States is really, really has been the challenge has been exacerbated by the events of the last 18 months, the pandemic and so on. And the kind of the microcosm is the chip shortage that has killed the supply chain, in essence, for vehicles, for cars and trucks in the United States. That is the way that's working is the way the supply chain is working in many cases for the defense industrial base too. But the other supply chain challenge is also what we're seeing more broadly in the private sector, and that is the labor supply chain. I don't know if a lot of people in broader America think about labor as a supply chain, but the Defense Department and the Defense Industrial Base definitely do. And there are instances where, for example, a shipyard will be closed for a number of weeks. We saw this a number of times over the summer because of a COVID outbreak. And they had all the parts they needed. They had all the raw materials they needed. They didn't have the humans they needed to put the pieces of the ship together. And so there are all kinds of supply chain challenges that the Defense Department's dealing with. And that's what Jerry's getting at. But that's the reason we don't know what the timeline is like, because it's not dependent on the availability necessarily of a thing or a piece of a thing, John.
And Jerry talks about education going forward for the future. So do we need a degree in supply chain, Francis? Is this a specialty that we ignored because we thought all these pieces worked together and now we know they're broken?
I think the education that will be useful for this is some kind of training and certification even maybe in logistics management, because knowing that you need all of these parts to make a widget, and of the 37 parts that you need, these four come from this place and these six come from, and so on, and understanding how all that works. I would expect to see a lot more emphasis on that. But, you know, there are organizations like the Defense Logistics Agency that do that for a living already in the government. I mean, that's the business they've been in for as long as they've existed. And there are places, and there are, of course, examples in the private sector, too, that the government and everybody else can learn from. It's just that until the pandemic began, I don't think anybody thought that the supply chain risks that we are seeing now would ever exist. I don't think people ever expected such a thing would happen.
Years ago, Francis, we had a lengthy conversation over many weeks about an audit of the Defense Department, which, I, as I recall at the time, it was an amazing fact that it might never have happened all totally. And it was underway for several years. Would an audit that is updated constantly and is rigorous, would that help supply chain?
It could, just because, so the Defense Department is, I believe, now in the third year of actually coming under audit, with an expectation when it began that it would take 10 years for them to receive a clean audit as a full department. There are parts of the department, components that have already reached full audit, clean audit opinions, but not the entire department. And it's, I think they still have seven more years if they're going to hit their goal. The initial goal, the original goal of 10 years. An audit would help because they've discovered things they didn't know they had, as they've compared their manifest to their stuff, so to speak. I'm oversimplifying it, but you get the idea. An audit would help, but it doesn't help you actually get the stuff that you really need. It helps you know what you need and helps you know what you have. But an audit doesn't necessarily define how you get a hold of stuff that you know you need and don't have.
Let's move over to another aspect of the recovery from the pandemic. This is the workforce. There, I learned from your conversation with Michelle Rosenberg, Director of Strategic Studies at Government Accountability Office, that they're thinking now about the workplace, about reopening all of the federal offices. There are 2.8 million people divided into several different kinds of groups, executives and then the worker bees, all that. My experience in Washington these years is that people are at home, and you've reported how productivity has gone up and people are happier not having to do the commute. But Francis, walking K Street recently in Washington, it was spooky. It's a ghost town. Are they coming back?
They're starting to come back. First of all, I wish I would have had a chance to cross paths with you when you were in Washington, and I commend a couple of places to you the next time you're here. But they're starting to come back. The challenge with this is there are actually a number of them, vis-a-vis the information you just laid out there. Your number's correct. There are 2.8 million federal employees across the country, civilian. That doesn't include men and women in uniform. But only about 15% of those are in the Washington, D.C. metropolitan area. The other 85% are all around the country. And so the comeback to the office plan is going to vary by agency, and it's going to vary by facility because, you know, for example, I live just outside of D.C. in Montgomery County, Maryland. Just yesterday was the end of a mask mandate for people to work indoors. In the District of Columbia, they still have a mask mandate for people working and patronizing businesses indoors. And so it's reasonable to think that the back to the office plan would be different for office of an agency that has an office in Montgomery County, Maryland, and has an office in the District of Columbia, or that has an office in Pennsylvania and has an office in Florida and has an office in Montgomery County, Maryland. There are just so many different ways that the laws exist and the laws can be interpreted, that there will not be ever probably a one size fits all back to the office plan for any federal agency or components of a federal agency, John.
Safety was also part of the conversation, and the social distancing, the masking, the vaccine mandates, these are all moving stories. Is that correct, Francis?
Yeah, they're all moving. And as I mentioned about my jurisdiction, they're primarily dependent on factors that the federal government doesn't have control over. They're primarily dependent on the motivation and restrictions of the employees that live in particular areas. What is clear and what is enterprise-wide across the entire federal government is that no, the Washington, D.C., and cities with big presences of federal government civilians will never look like they looked in February of 2020 ever again. There's no clamoring among the federal workforce, just as there's no clamoring in the private sector workforce. Please, can we come back to the office 5 days a week? Please, can we sit in traffic between 7:30 and 9 o'clock in the morning and 5 o'clock and 6:30 in the afternoon? Please, can we? Please, can we? Nobody wants to do that permanently anymore. The downtown D.C. will look dramatically different the same way downtown New York City will look, and I think every other city in the country.
So that maximum telework posture, which is what the GAO study says was adopted in March 2020, is going to change, but it's not going to go away. The telework will remain. Is that correct? We have about 30 seconds.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right, John. The question is, how will that change? And I think the answer to that, like the answer to so many things about the federal government, is it's complicated, John.
I know, but I count on you, Francis, for complicated. Now, you say you don't have a timeline. There is anecdote in Manhattan now about coming back to work starting January, one day, one Monday every second week, or a Tuesday and a Friday every second week, something like that. Is that part of the conversation for the federal workforce?
I don't expect to see any kind of uniform guidance for any government-wide organization. I expect every agency will do it differently,
right,
and every location will do it differently.
Francis Rose, he is the host of The Daily Scoop, part of the FedScoop website. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batch.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed, or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART, or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.